And the next matter on today's calendar is the State of Minnesota versus Davies. And counsel, you each have 15 minutes for your oral arguments. The appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please introduce yourself prior to beginning your oral arguments. And please feel free to adjust the podium in accordance with your height. And counsel, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. I am Sarah Martin. I represent the appellant, Blanion Davies. Mr. Davies was convicted of aggravated robbery following a jury trial in Hennepin County. I raised a number of issues in the brief, and today I would like to talk about the last issue of newly discovered evidence.
Let me ask you, yes. So you have a series of issues with regard to evidentiary rulings, let's just say.
That's correct.
And there's, as I said, a series of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so your argument is that it's the accumulation of all of those that deprived your client of a fair trial. Is that right?
Yeah, a number of the issues, and I did note it in the brief, that I think could have impacted the verdict on its own, and then certainly the cumulative effect of all of the evidentiary issues at trial.
So let's look at the...
Thank you. Mr. Davies is entitled to a new trial based upon newly discovered evidence. After trial, defense counsel received a number of text messages between Julius Ogunti and the complainant and the co-defendant Mengistu Zarzar. In those messages, Mr. Ogunti was taunting Mr. Zarzar. He was threatening him. And all of these messages supported Mr. Davies' version of events. Davies raised this claim in a motion for a new trial, which was filed late. And the court denied that motion, that initial motion for a new trial, on substantive and procedural grounds, but did not get into the substance of the ruling. Mr. Davies' counsel then filed a motion to reconsider, and that motion was denied on the record at the sentencing hearing on grounds that the rules do not allow for a extension of a motion to file for a new trial.
Well, and of course, there's that De La Cruz case.
That's true, Your Honor. And I would agree that in this case that the rules do prohibit. In De La Cruz, I believe it was they had filed the motion on time, but then filed an amended motion or supplemented the motion. In this case, the initial motion was filed 2 hours late.
In 38 minutes,
yes. But I would submit to this court that the record is sufficient. The defense was really in kind of a tough position here. The defense received this information, didn't have the time to file a motion for a new trial before the deadline, but was also in a position where they couldn't really file a motion for post-conviction relief either because he would have had to have been sentenced first. The defense probably shouldn't just sit on that information and then bring it up after trial. So the defense was really in a tough position, but the defense did provide all of the text messages to the court, and the record is sufficient to rule on this issue on appeal.
And those texts were provided, am I correct, with the motion to reconsider?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So are you saying that, are you arguing on appeal that the district court erred by denying the motion based on untimeliness?
I'm not, Your Honor, because the rules don't provide for it.
Then isn't that the end of the matter, or at least isn't that a sufficient basis to affirm? Even, shouldn't say sufficient, maybe necessary reason to affirm.
This court can, in the interest of justice, rule on an issue that was brought but not timely. In fact, this court can rule on an issue in the interest of justice even if the issue is not brought before the district court, as long as the record is sufficient to do so. In this case, the record is sufficient. If I had stayed this appeal and gone post-conviction, raising a motion for a new trial or alleging new evidence, there would have been nothing to add to the record. So there was really no basis to do that. The entire record was before the court. It's just that because of this strange procedural no man's land that the defense was in at the time, the court didn't believe that it could rule on it. But all of the information is there.
But it doesn't. I'm struggling to understand. And if the district court may not consider the issue because the motion was untimely, it doesn't seem right that an appellate court could consider the same issue that was untimely. I mean, is the case law you're referring to specifically on point that way? I'm aware of. I mean, I think you refer to the interest of justice justification, but I'm just not sure if the case law that you're relying on is just like this case procedurally.
No, Your Honor, it's not. I'm generally relying on the interest of justice provision. And I think that, you know, even in cases of plain error where issues are not raised at all below, the court can still consider these issues. And again, the defense was in a kind of a strange position here where they couldn't bring the motion for a new trial. They couldn't bring post-conviction proceedings. This was really a situation that maybe the rules don't address or don't contemplate. But what I am suggesting is that because the record is sufficient, this court has got sufficient information to rule on this issue.
The defense knew, the state brings up that the defense knew that Zarzar and Ogunti had some animosity even before trial. So the defense was aware of that before trial.
The defense was aware of that, but was not aware of these text messages. The state had turned over a portion of the text messages, which I believe it had received from Mr. Ogunti. Those text messages did not, it appears that the messages that were turned over from Mr. Ogunti, I'm not alleging that the state did anything wrong here, to the authorities were the ones that painted him in a better light. But the defense had no reason. There's nothing in the record to suggest the defense should have known that there were additional messages. And then because Mr. Zarzar was a charged co-defendant and represented by counsel, defense counsel could not speak with him to get this. And had no reason.
I note that argument in the briefs, but counsel could have spoken to counsel, correct?
Counsel could have spoken to counsel, but if there's no reason to believe that these text messages might exist, there was really no reason for counsel to go on a fishing expedition for something that might have been out there.
So the last, I believe it's the last factor or a requirement of the newly discovered evidence test talks about what would have happened. I don't have the language in front of me. What would have happened if this evidence had been, perhaps you can recite it for me.
Yes, the standard is the evidence would probably produce a more favorable result.
Right. Isn't the district court judge in the best position to analyze that issue in the first instance rather than this court? You say the record is sufficient, but the district judge had the advantage of presiding over the multi-day trial, listening to the witnesses and so on.
That's certainly true, and if this court would prefer the district court judge to rule that, this court could certainly remand for post-conviction proceedings on the new evidence issue.
Or you could petition for post-conviction relief?
Yes, I could, Your Honor.
So I'm trying to go back to district court days.
Yes.
And so your client's trial attorney got some text messages that apparently Mr. Ogunti edited himself.
Yes.
To make himself look as good as possible. But your client's attorney could have also subpoenaed all of them for trial, right?
The defense attorney had no reason to know that more existed.
And as you say, the state didn't know either.
The state didn't know.
It was either. Mr. Ogunti.
That is my reading of the record, Your Honor, yes. The second factor under the Rainier test is the failure to learn about the text was not due to a lack of diligence. And we've touched on that a little bit. The state had disclosed the messages between Mr. Ogunti and Mr. Zarzar, and there was really no reason for the defense to know that there was more. The third factor is whether the evidence is material, not merely impeaching, cumulative, or doubtful. In this case, the text messages were material. They were directly relevant to the defense theory and really did support the defense version of events in this case.
How would you characterize the cross-examination of Ogunti at trial?
I think it was probably a challenging cross-examination for the defense because Mr. Ogunti's statements had differed so many times. And
certainly that would be fodder for poking holes at his credibility.
That's true. It was. But I think that what the prosecutor did in closing argument, which was very effective, was sort of gloss over all of those misstatements or changing statements and say, there's a few questions here. If Mr. Ogunti and Mr. Davies were friends, why would Mr. Ogunti lie? Why was Mr. Ogunti there that day?
But then, of course, your client's attorney, in closing, could stand up and say, prosecutor wants you to gloss over everything, but let's just take step-by-step look at all of these statements.
Certainly, and I think that's what the defense attorney did at trial. However, what the defense attorney wasn't able to do without these text messages was use Mr. Ogunti's own words against him. The defense was not able to show that Mr. Ogunti and Mr. Zarzar were in a much more substantial conflict, that Mr. Ogunti was actively looking for a confrontation with Mr. Zarzar. So that would have answered that one question by the state, why Mr. Ogunti was there. He was there due to this conflict, and that was consistent with Mr. Davies' version of events in this case, which is that he was friends with both men and he was trying to resolve that dispute. As for the second question...
Aren't you now bumping into that language in the third factor of the test that the evidence is not merely impeaching?
Yes, Your Honor, that is the third factor of the test. But I think the modifier merely is important here. In cases that have addressed the merely impeaching evidence, such as Pippett and Miles, that was evidence that would not have been admissible as substantive evidence. It was evidence that would have come in, if at all, only as impeachment evidence. In Pippett, the Minnesota Supreme Court was also concerned about the fact that the third party had no direct knowledge of anything related to the murder or to Mr. Pippett's involvement in the murder. So that's what merely impeaching means, and that's how it's been interpreted by appellate courts in Minnesota.
I'm sorry, can you say that's how it's been interpreted? How would you sum up those holdings?
It has been interpreted as evidence that would be admitted at all, only as impeachment evidence.
But isn't that what, I mean, I guess my understanding of your argument, my understanding of the evidence, the long text string, is that it would have impeached the witness Ogunti in a very potent way. It would have, I mean, your argument is, I think, it would have blown his testimony out of the water. It would have shown that everything he said at trial was completely fabricated, right?
It certainly would have done that, yes. But it also would have been admitted.
Because it impeached him, it seems to me. I mean, it's not, and so I guess, I mean, does the not merely impeaching mean that sort of minor, semi-effective impeachment is not enough, but it leaves room for sort of, you know, a super effective impeachment evidence?
I think that would be a fair reading of it.
Is there case law that says that?
I have not seen case law that directly interprets merely impeaching.
Ms. Martin, I was just checking back through the briefs again. I don't think the Pippett case was cited in anyone's brief.
The Pippett case was cited, I believe, by the state. And if I'm wrong, I will get a citation.
Oh, no, you're right, on page 25.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So, no, there is, to answer Judge Johnson's question, there's no specific language that says merely impeaching is. I have not seen language to that. But what I can tell you is that in Rainier and in Heard and Pippett and in Miles, all of which are cited in the briefs, that the way that evidence has been discounted as merely impeaching, it is if it is only admitted as impeachment evidence. In this case, it would have been admitted as substantive evidence, just as the remainder of the texts came in at trial as substantive evidence. It was also evidence that directly supported the defense version of events in this case, about why Mr. Ogunti was there and about what ensued after he arrived.
Okay, I'm sorry if I misunderstood your argument so far. So is there case law that says that if the newly discovered evidence is both impeaching and substantive, or then it doesn't run afoul of this third requirement?
There is not case law that specifically says that. But again, I think the modifier merely impeaching is important. So if it is impeaching plus, and that could be if it is extremely impeaching, as in your hypothetical, or if it is also admissible as substantive evidence in the case, then it is not merely impeaching. Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel, John Schmidt, Assistant Hennepin County Attorney on behalf of the state of Minnesota. The trial court did not abuse its discretion in the various trial rulings, nor did the court abuse its discretion in denying appellant's motion for a new trial. We ask this court to affirm. Regarding the new trial motion, it is procedurally barred because it was untimely, and there are no rules that allow that 15-day timing to be extended. And as appellant concedes, that it was past that 15-day deadline. The De La Cruz case does not save that for this circumstances. De La Cruz was a circumstance where the new trial motion was timely filed. An amended motion came after that, and the amended motion related back to a timely filed motion. Beyond untimely, it's also looking at the motion that was filed and the arguments that were made. Arguably, this is forfeited because the arguments that were made below were alleged only that it believed to include several hundred additional statements. That was what the motion was filed. There was nothing argued about new evidence or the applicable factors to receive relief, and such a motion under case law without argument is insufficient to grant a new trial. Since it wasn't litigated properly below, it would be forfeited. Even if timely and if not forfeited, and this court looks at the interests of justice, it should still affirm because the second and the third Rainier factors do not support granting a reversal and a new trial. Under the second factor, defense certainly knew of Zarzar. The defense certainly knew that J.O. and Zarzar had a dispute and knew that J.O. and Zarzar had been texting. The defense counsel could have talked to Zarzar's counsel to try to get that information or sent a subpoena to get the text messages from Zarzar. So the evidence could have been discovered. And importantly, in the new trial motion, there's nothing about what investigation defense did in order to try to obtain any of this information. There's no detail of any investigation. It was simply that Zarzar was represented by counsel and therefore couldn't talk to Zarzar directly. Similarly, the third Rainier factor is not met. This evidence would be simply impeaching. The defense would, as appellant stated here today, use his own words against him. That is classic impeachment material. The Pippett case, which I did cite in the brief at page 25, was cited only about the proposition of casting doubt on the truthfulness of a witness's testimony, which is classic impeachment material. It wasn't cited for the proposition of merely or merely being a modifier. As far as I'm aware, that's the first time that it was argued is today at argument.
What about, could this evidence also be substantive evidence, and would that then evade the third factor?
I think this evidence is just impeachment, because it only goes to the credibility of J.O. and J.O.'s story. And there certainly were holes in J.O.'s story, which then the prosecutor during trial used information like the video and the police testimony, that they did find him sweating and that his eyes were a little red as he's out running, chasing the car after he had been robbed at the apartment. So taking the text messages as they came, it would just only impeach and poke holes in the truthfulness of his story, which goes directly only to impeachment.
What if trial counsel, defense counsel chose to, take this exhibit, perhaps introduce it through Mr. Agunti during cross-examination, not ask questions that, directly attempted to contradict his testimony, but just got the document into evidence and then argued it to the jury. This shows, this document shows, tells a story of why Agunti was there, and it matches my client's testimony.
And that, again, goes, although not impeaching the witness directly, that goes to the truthfulness of his story and goes to impeachment generally.
Well, no, I tried to describe a scenario at trial, where the counsel does not use it to impeach, as that term is understood, but rather uses it to put an exhibit into evidence that could be used to the defendant's advantage in closing argument.
Well, another factor in the third Rainier factor is cumulative. And this evidence, as I've also argued in the brief, is also cumulative of the dispute that existed between Zarzar and J.O., that they were involved in this dispute, that there was issues between the two. They had evidence of some text messages, so this would just add upon what was already introduced at trial to try to poke holes into J.O.'s testimony. And finally, I noted in the brief that I think it's also doubtful because there was not a foundational basis for any of this, although you don't necessarily need that foundational reliability at the new trial stage. There was nothing from Zarzar. There's nothing from Zarzar's attorney to say, yep, these are actually the text messages from their phone. This was just from the attorney representing that this was indeed messages from the exchange between the two. The cleanest way is that this is barred, this is time barred, or it's forfeited. But even if you do get to the Rainier factors, it's also fails on the merits.
I was going to ask that if you, how would you would like us to affirm, obviously. How would you like us to affirm? Do you have a request for the particular manner or reasoning that the court should use in affirming?
I think because it's time barred, that's the end of the analysis, that you don't need to go further in that analysis because it was untimely filed. The motion for reconsideration doesn't save the untimeliness of the new trial motion. I think that is where the analysis stops. Very briefly on the trial errors, the trial court did not abuse discretion in admitting and limiting Davies' convictions or the victim's convictions, admitting the minimal testimony about RG not being charged, striking testimony and giving a curative instruction about the officer's testimony or in its rulings related to the body cam video. And I will rest on my brief on those issues. Unless the court has any other questions, we ask that you affirm. Thank you.
I was just looking at your appendix or your addendum and at the screenshots of the phone.
Yes, Your Honor.
And it's JMN exclamation exclamation.
Yes.
Do we know who that J man is?
No. I don't.
Okay, thanks.
The state is arguing for a very expansive definition of merely impeaching. I think that if the Minnesota Supreme Court had wanted to do that, it would have left out the term merely. And This evidence was not merely impeaching. It does more than just poke holes in Mr. Agunti's testimony. This is substantive evidence that supports Mr. Davies' version of events. I think that the Pancotti case is helpful. In Pancotti, the defense sought to introduce testimony from police officers about the victim's reputation for violence. And that was the state's argument in that case as well, that this was merely...
Could you just elaborate on that? Because, I mean, I kind of looked at these emails, and I don't think anyone disputed, and the jury clearly knew these guys were having a dispute and that there was some bad blood. And this seems to just, you know, it seems kind of cumulative that this is the case. How does this material to his defense? Because, I mean, the jury already knew they didn't like each other and there were some issues.
The jury did know that there were some issues, but what the jury didn't know is the level of the dispute between the two men. Mr. Agunti characterized himself as kind of on the periphery of this car deal between Mr. Zarzar and Mr. Topo, and did so quite effectively. And no one disagreed that the original car deal was between those two men. So why would Mr. Agunti be so upset about it? It also shows that Mr. Agunti was interested in going after not just Mr. Zarzar, but his people, his friends, which would certainly include Mr. Davies.
But didn't the jury already know that? Didn't they already know these facts? I guess I'm just trying to understand, how is this material, other than to show that there's further evidence that there was bad blood between these individuals?
It gets back to those questions that the state asked during closing argument. And again, the state did a very effective job in closing argument of glossing over a lot of the issues in this case and really presenting the dispute between Mr. Zarzar and Mr. Agunti as less serious than it clearly was after you read all of the texts in this case. So it provides an explanation for why Mr. Agunti was there at the house or at the apartment complex that day. That supports Mr. Davies' version of events, that he did not lure Mr. Agunti there. It shows that Mr. Agunti was actively seeking out confrontation with Mr. Zarzar, which was not present in the texts that were admitted at trial. So it went beyond just that these two men didn't like each other. It's that Mr. Agunti was actively seeking out confrontation. And again, that supports the defense version of events. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We will take the matter under advisement. Thank you for your arguments here today.